Our country is more divided than ever before, and not just between those who put pineapple on their pizza.
There's members on both sides of the aisle who are more interested in making noise than they are about governing.
From the committee rooms to this floor, we commit to pursue the truth passionately.
There's a mic right there, and that's a damn short walk.
It's why people don't trust people like you, because you peddle false narratives. And so we disabuse you of those narratives.
We must all hang together, Benjamin Franklin said, or assuredly we will all hang separately.
Previously on Dakota Town Hall.
Representative Carr, you want Carr Cut. You want something named after you. In your guys' line, you'd rather or hatefully remembered than lovingly forgotten, right?
Politicians are sometimes not very open to change, and sometimes I know a few that would dig in even if they're wrong.
We're lucky enough to be joined by Mr. Carl Adam from the South Dakota Bankers Association.
Legal certainty is good. You know how business should be taken care of. So this is not only good for the banking industry, but it's good for retail and automobile dealerships and so forth.
I mean, yeah, I get it. If you want something and the government to support it, you go down there and get that support. But yeah, if she wanted that food tax cut, and she goes, you got to come to me for my own thing. No.
Welcome to Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's weekly political podcast.
Here we go, back again. It is Dakota Town Hall, and we have an absolutely packed episode. And Jake is ditching us for Bert Kreischer. Is that what he said today? He's going to that Bert Kreischer show.
You know, he could say whatever he wants. I talked to him about a couple hours ago, and he saw how bad he did in that first round. Man, he was in tears.
You think this is about the Twitter poll? Chat. All right, so we got to talk about the Dakota Town Hall Twitter poll. We have to talk about that today. First, we're going to talk to Pat Powers from Dakota War College. He's got some updates on the tax cut drama. We should also see if he's got some scorecard updates too. We'll talk to him about that. Since Jake is out, we have a co-host, Senator Michael Roll, joining in. You are going to fill the Northeastern Schoenbeck contingent. How do you feel about that?
I can handle it, I think. I'm okay with that.
You have to get a series of ugly ties, and then, and then what else?
Okay, I'm out.
He's got to win a bracket, too.
You got to win a bracket, too.
It's important to note
he did win the bracket.
That he's from District 1, not the 1st District.
Not the 1st District.
Or the number 1 District.
And so now that you're hearing that voice, I'm glad he popped. Don, we are joined by legendary South Dakota Politico. I've been thinking about how I wanted to introduce you all day, and legendary South Dakota Politico is where I landed. Mr. Jeffrey Partridge, thanks for coming on in person too.
Thanks for having me here.
So where do Noah, where do you want to start, since we have all of these people on the show?
Before we get into tax cuts, we better start with tax increases. So to start on the tax increase part of the timeline, better bring in, we have Partridge, like you said, Murdoch, in person. And, you know, there is this thing. It's on a headstone somewhere on Twitter right now, this thing called the Partridge Amendment. It's a term that a lot of people have probably seen and heard.
You're famous.
What actually is it?
Well, thank you, Noah. The Partridge Amendment is the amendment to the teacher tax increase, House Bill 1182 from back in 2016. It's actually 1182 FB. I'd rather call it that than the Partridge Amendment, but it got the name and it stuck.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah. And so I think what it is basically to say that if we were to be able to collect the internet sales tax revenue, because at the time we did not have that, unless you had nexus in the state, which meant some sort of, you know, place of business in the state, you basically did not have to collect sales tax in the state of South Dakota. So all these online places and, you know, catalogs from days gone by really, you know, did not have to worry about that. And the Partridge Amendment said, if we're ever able to get that done, then maybe we should reduce the sales tax and get the sales tax taken off one little bit at a time, according to a very measured response to the sales tax increases. I think that it's fair to say the future did come true in that we started to collect quite a bit more sales tax. Of course, it actually got more complicated because we did not know exactly or what was an internet sale or what was, you know, an on-site sale. It got more complicated with the marketplace. And so large retailers had a marketplace, as does online, you know, with a marketplace. And so it became a little more complicated to figure out exactly what was online. But I think you can safely say that the amount of revenue that South Dakota is collecting today is certainly bigger than it was without question, with the internet sales tax having been passed and won back with the Wayfair decision.
And so keep in mind some history for those of you that maybe don't remember why the tax increase was there. At the time, it was a fight about teacher pay. That's why this increase was being talked about in the zeitgeist at all. So I guess let's start here. What are your thoughts on this year's session and the tax reduction and the all of the tax cuts that were available? And, you know, you are a longtime appropriator. Understand how the money works in this state, maybe as good as anybody. I'm interested to hear what you think.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting that the sales tax cut was the one that won. Clearly, there was, if you go door to door, and maybe Mike can pitch in on this, is that, you know, most times people will talk more about property tax than they will about just a general sales tax. I also think that the governor really felt like the food tax would have had the greater impact on South Dakota families, and I think that's true. And so the sales tax reduction, while I'm really happy about it because I think it is the Partridge Amendment come true or come to life or come to fruition, I do believe that, you know, when you talk to South Dakotans from corner to corner of this great state, I think that people talk more about property tax and the concern thereof than they do about saving maybe $50 or $70 on sales tax. And so either way, it became $105 million. We call that a rip in the bag in budgetary terms. And that is what passed, and the governor did sign it, although she said she didn't like it. But that's fine. I think it is a reduction of sales tax. It's giving money back to the people. It fulfills a promise, and I look forward to us continuing our growth rate in order to take off the other 0.2. I think we should keep going.
Senator Roll, anything you want to add as somebody who had insight to this year's Hubble Bubble?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, and I think Jeff kind of touched on it, that the Senate really wasn't a place where we felt property tax was something that the majority of our constituents, have brought up, whether it be in recent years or just historically, because, it seems to be one of those bills that's a little harder to pay because it's a big amount. I guess depending if you have a loan and you're breaking it up or not, but it's a big amount for a lot of people, where when you're talking about, sales tax or grocery tax or, food tax on your groceries, it's traditionally more smaller amounts. And, obviously the Senate did pass a voucher, essentially a rebate, back to the folks. That was something the House just, really wasn't on board with. We obviously had a debate about the food tax, which ended up getting 18 votes as well in the Senate. I think if we took that vote again today, I don't think it would have got the 18. I think that was a little bit of a push from the governor's office to whip those 18 together. But obviously the House ended up putting that to bed. Obviously, anytime you can cut taxes, I think it's really important. If Jeff could address it, back when you guys were having these debates, when you guys, raised taxes and added the Partridge Amendment, what was the goal for education? Like, where did we want education to be? Obviously, we know our teacher pay is generally around, I think, 50th. Statewide, I think we're 36th, 37th in providing it. So some of those dollars are hitting more of the superintendent level. But I guess, what was our goal at that time?
Well, our goal was that last place wasn't good enough. And we're right back to last place again, and that's frustrating for teacher pay. I think we're going to help the situation this year, what you guys did in terms of doing 7%, which was absolutely awesome for K-12 education. And I think that'll help out quite a bit. But nonetheless, our goal, to answer the question specifically, was that teachers we were really focused on getting them paid more. We redid the formula at the time, too. Senate Bill 131 was a complementary bill along with the 1182. And so there was also this, addressing some of these small schools and trying to figure out how to, do these small classrooms and deal with student-teacher ratios. So I think that's what we were trying to do. I'd frankly like to look at something again
post-COVID, it's a whole new ballgame for most of these schools anyway. It's really time to look at everything.
It really is. And I think there's great opportunity today that wasn't there, in our minds even before Zoom or before COVID. that we can look at some great learning opportunities throughout the state without necessarily having to consolidate schools.
I want to go back to the politics of this a little bit more. You know, we have a lot of guests on talking about the logistics and the logic and less of the pomp and circumstance. But, like, I think one of the things that's happened in this session is a setup for this food tax cut, right? Like, I think Jeff's right. I think Noam's going to keep pushing on it. I think what we saw is a preview of what to come. But I also think it gives the Democrats a real ability to say, you guys had every chance you could in the world to get a tax cut passed, and you taxed a pass cut for combine owners and left every poor family sitting. That's, if I'm running campaigns against it, that's the first card I send out, right? Like, where's the answer to that?
Well, I think when I sat down with the governor as her commissioner of BFM last year and running, you know, being the CFO for the state, I do know that one of the things she said was that she was always really wanting the grocery tax, you know, to be come off. She never understood why we have the grocery tax and felt that the greatest impact on families in South Dakota would be eliminating the grocery tax, even though that's a storied Democrat, you know, type of response or bill that they run every year. It was just something that said, hey, she said, I want to take a look at this. And so, you know, we did a lot of research on it. We tried to figure it out. There's a lot of research that goes into what was presented this year. I think it can be even better, you know, I mean, with the tribes and different things in that, you know, with that bill, it can get even better. And I do think that there'll be an opportunity to talk about it next year, frankly. I mean, the budget that they adopted this year, to me, looks like about 3.8% growth, maybe just shy of 4% growth is what they're projecting, you know, for the fiscal year 2024. Well, if that's the case, that means that we're going to go from a 10% growth rate down to a 4% growth rate, and I don't know that that's going to happen in South Dakota. I mean, we are clicking along and continuing to do really, really well in our state, thanks to the governor and her leadership, thanks to small business, thanks to our economy and the rules and the freedoms that we have here, or the lack of rules and really great freedoms that we have in South Dakota that allows
post-COVID growth.
Post-COVID growth, and that's not only tourism, that's also small business and people moving their businesses here from all over the place, and we just welcome them with open arms, and I think that's where we will continue this growth rate. So, do I think that there's potential for greater revenue as we look out into the future for fiscal year 2025? I do. And I think the number that was adopted will be something that will be up for debate again.
You mentioned when you were BFM commissioner that the governor had expressed to you that she was in favor of the sales tax cut on groceries. Now, this is an issue we've heard from different sources from, you know, some in the Senate, some in the House, that the food tax in 2022 was something that the governor was something that the governor was adamantly opposed to, that she did not want the sales tax cut on groceries. So there's two narratives competing there, that she wanted it and she didn't. Did the governor want the sales tax cut on groceries in 2022?
Well, I think what you have to look at, Noah, is the idea that during mid-session, do you bring up a sales tax cut on groceries? And whether, you know, if you want the sales tax cut on groceries, I think it's a matter of timing. And so my advice to her at the time was, we can look at this, and we did, and we researched it, and we looked at all the different, you know, categories of food and what would be considered grocery and not, and did, you know, really quite a bit of, spent quite a bit of extra time on that. The question then became, you know, you've already introduced a budget, you already are mid-session, the Appropriations Committee is meeting. And so now the question is, do you want to introduce something that would really create, I think at the time we talked about maybe $80 million or $90 million of a cut right in the middle of session. And so I think the answer was no, I don't think that's fiscally responsible, said the governor, to necessarily do this mid-session. I think the right approach is to wait, and she did.
And I appreciate that answer. I do think that that provides a lot more context as to what, you know, there has been a lot of he said, she said on that whole deal of, you know, we've had people say she's in favor of it, she's not in favor of it. So what you're saying, it may not have been as much about who's in favor or who's not in favor, more if it was a timing issue, or maybe it was that the budget was already put together and you're just saying that timing was everything and last session wasn't the right time,
and Noah,
per se, with logistics.
You know this because you might say, I'm really interested in looking at cutting the tax on groceries, and then a week later go up and kill Senator Nesava's bill that says let's cut the tax on groceries. And so the question then becomes, well, was she for it or was she not? Well, she was, you know, discovering and looking into and asking questions and wondering. And then I went and talked to Senator Schoenbeck about whether or not this was even feasible mid-session. You know, if we were to come up with some sort of budgetary, cuts here, cuts there, we redid the budget. And he was just like, that seems, to be not necessarily responsible for us to move forward in that direction. And he might have had a little more colorful language, actually, for what we should do there. But nonetheless, we stopped in our tracks at that point and just said, okay, this isn't going through the Senate and isn't something that really, you know, is timing-wise the right avenue. And frankly, I think I agreed with Senator Schoenbeck at the time. So while you depends on what you define as a, you know, proponent, opponent, her team went up and opposed a bill. Well, of course, because the decision had been made, basically, hey, I'm for this grocery tax cut, but I'm against doing this mid-session. So therefore, I'm interested in talking more about the grocery tax cut, but I'm going to kill the bill. And that's how politics works, as you know.
So that's enough broccoli on the politics. Let's talk about how gossipy can you get today? How gossipy you feeling? We should have had a cocktail pour before you got here, get you a little loose. And we're going to talk to Pat about this too, but let's fly a little rumor mill out. You got any insight on the word is Rounds coming back to run for governor?
I really don't think he will. You know, just the fact that he has nine grandkids maybe or whatever
so, yeah.
It is, you know, in peer means that he's going to come home and want to work there. I mean, Mike Rounds is, I don't know, is he 68? You know,
at least mid-60s.
Something like that. I think he's really hitting a great stride in the Senate right now. He's on the banking committee. That's going to be even more important today than it was just a month ago.
Do you think he stays?
And I think he stays, well, for sure, the rest of his term.
Sure.
Does he run again for the Senate? That could really be a big question for Senator Mike Rounds, because I think he's going to have to decide, I'm doing a great job here. Do I want to come back and be a governor? I just personally don't see it.
How about, let's just go here. How about you for U.S. House? I like that, don't you?
I don't know if I want to be in Washington, D.C.
Okay. You always have a pretty good artful dodge to it, but you're always my good dark horse pick for someone who would do a good job.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are interested. Obviously, it'll be a very, contentious and great primary. I was interested in that at one time when we had a special election in the Republican Party in 2004. It's very difficult to make a difference when you're just one in that group. And I think that's even in the minority, then it gets even harder, right? So Dusty's last few years haven't been that much fun. I think he's having some fun today, except for maybe the congresswoman that kicks the seat behind him.
Yeah, he's neighbors with Lauren Boebert. When you go visit him, her office is right next to it with all the ding-dong flags and everything. it looks like a bummer for everybody, man.
Well,
it's all a setup. One of the greatest primaries that could ever exist in this state would be Rounds versus Dusty. It'd be a slog.
He'd have to really make the case that he needs to come back and that he has some amazing ideas for South Dakota, and that's why he needs to be governor, versus I just want to live in Pierre and be grandpa. I think people would have the question as to say, okay, what's the business plan? And if there was, fire in the belly and there was lots of great ideas and, there was all this kind of, change that he wanted to make, I think that's where, that could get interesting.
But sure.
I think as far as where that's going today, Dusty certainly seems to be lining up for that and working towards that end.
Sure looks like it. I'll let you guys have any last questions with Senator Partridge. Do we still call you that? I just.
You can call me whatever you want.
Legendary Politico. Do you have any questions for legendary Politico, Jeff Partridge?
I'm board of regent now, too.
That's true. So. Mr. Regent Partridge. There you go. Mike, you got any final wrap-ups?
I guess one thing I'm just kind of curious on in general, because I'm not sure of, being a financial guy, I'm kind of curious for Jeff's ad on the UCC bill.
It's a UCC bill.
Keep in mind, no one knows what the UCC bill is, and you're 10 times smarter than everybody, will you? Because we snored everybody to death on this topic last week.
Well, it's interesting. There's this a group out there called the Uniform Law Commission, the ULC, and they make basic laws, and not basic laws, they make all sorts of laws that the states then adopt, and they adopt to actually make the states stronger. So it's a brand of federalism, if you will, because we like the states being stronger. Those of us that have been in the legislature want even to increase that. So this group has been, you know, meeting forever. We've had a number of different people, you know, lawyers in the, you know, House and Senate draw the short straw to go to these ULC meetings because they are dry. And it's interesting to me that this one came about because it was kind of the annual UCC bill or something that is mostly annual. What people look at was, you know, they were concerned that somehow we'd be creating, you know, a currency of sorts, you know, through this bill. That's not the case. And what's interesting about the creation of currency is that if the federal government wanted to do it, they wouldn't need the states at all. They would just run them over and say, well, you guys can do whatever you want with this, you know, ULC or whatever, but this is what we're doing and this is what the federal government's going to be, you know, backing. So I think that's one thing that's very interesting, that the feds can basically do whatever they want. The second thing on that UCC bill that I thought was interesting was, is it really, the way I looked at it, it sets us up for trade internationally. We don't see, like, say, you know, some of these cryptocurrencies as currency. We see them as digital assets in our state. And so what this UCC bill said is, hey, if a country considers a cryptocurrency its currency and we want to trade with them, we better have some things in place to be able to do that. Now, I don't think small country wherever is going to really dominate some sort of world reserve currency, but I do think it's necessary for trade, and that's the purpose of the UCC bill and why the banks are interested in promoting it, because they say, should we want to do some kind of trade with some country out there that sees cryptocurrency as its currency or whatever, we ought to be able to have something in place.
Are you telling me my Kazakhstani internet dinar or whatever I have, that's not good enough? That's not a good sound investment strategy?
I would say it's not a sound investment strategy, although I would say that it's also a questionable currency.
Well, this is Jeff Partridge, Regent. Appropriator. Appropriator always kind of sounds cool, right? Like adjudicator. That's what I like to
call it. I'll just mention about the budget if I could. I you know, to Senator Roll, you know, thank you guys for what you did. I'll just put on my Regent hat here for a minute. Really, really appreciate, obviously, the state employees. That includes over half of the Regents, you know, are going to get the 7% increase. We have a tuition freeze in place. I hope this gets a lot of press related to our third year in a row of a tuition freeze. We are freezing tuition in the state of South Dakota with the backdrop of the highest inflation that some of us have seen in, you know, 40 years plus, or all of us have, you know, if you haven't been around that long. But in your lifetime, maybe you haven't seen this type of inflation, and we are actually freezing tuition. We have a data set now of a number of years that we can actually, you know, talk to prospective students from around our region, other states, that we can say, hey, the legislature, the Board of Regents, the governor are interested in freezing tuition and making sure that we have a cost-effective way for you to increase the station in your life as to where you want to be and help you get to that next level. That, to me, is really, really something that's amazing. Very, very thankful for the legislature that they did that.
You did something right, Mike.
I don't know if I can take credit for that one. I mean, obviously, I love to support the Regents, but I think that's a combination of, you know, obviously Jeff doing his job, and as well as, you know, the leaders we have in the Senate, like Gene Hunhoff and Brian Breitling and Maher and Kolbeck. And
this is a gossip political show. All you guys do is compliment each other. It's a real pain in the ass.
No, it's true. The Senate appropriators this year, they're just amazing. Being able to go and listen to their committees and then being able to, you know, go back to caucus and have them break everything down and saying, you know, where are you guys at? This is what we think we can do. And getting all that back knowledge. You know, there's a lot of appropriation committees over the years that do not provide or did not provide that kind of in-depth analysis to all the members. And our appropriators do that. So I have nothing but good things to say about them, because obviously when we're taking these votes, we need to make sure we're understanding the topics, and those guys just do a great job of explaining it.
That was former Senator Jeffrey Partridge and current Board of Regents. Maybe, not probably, potential U.S. House candidate. Anyways, thanks for coming on. Now let's get to one of the most popular, if not the probably the most popular, statewide political website. It is called the DakotaWarCollege.com. Its author is Mr. Pat Powers. Dear friend, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. Although I'm not sure how popular I am, I think I was the first one out in your... in your guest brackets that you did.
I was too, if it makes you feel any better. I think I got beat by a cat. I got beat by Jake's family's dead cat on Twitter. There's my standing right now. That's what the Twitter Republicans think of me.
It was a famous cat, at least in the news for a week or so.
I'll take it.
It is a nationally news certified cat. This thing was an AP news. And like Jake said, you know, I was looking back, and I'll give a shout out to Austin Goss. He did a Twitter thread about the cat, right? And he said, this was in a tweet, and the tweet mentions the podcast that mentions this. And I'm like, you could have named us. I mean, come on. Like, are we good enough for AP News, but we're not good enough for Dakota News Now? So I'm sure I'm going to get a text about that. But, you know, love you, Austin, but come on, man.
Well, I'm sure we'll probably get to some protecting South Dakota kids stuff, especially since we have Senator Rolon with us. But I guess we should start with you on Veto Day stuff. Where should we start with you, Pat?
We can talk about Veto Day, but there's not too much to talk about. The governor just vetoed her fifth and final bill today on, I believe today was the industrial hemp bill, where there was a bill in to allow a higher percentage of THC in industrial hemp that went through both houses, and the governor vetoed that. She's got five vetoes total. The hemp bill, there was a alcohol consumption bill, which would have allowed Augustana University's
We call this Noah's bill.
Yes, Noah's. Noah's
this is the Noah Gravel bill.
The sip and spit bill, I think it was called, yeah. To let people test beer brewing. And then, of course, all these 19-year-olds would immediately spit it out. And I think the governor thought that was kind of silly, and I can't blame her. I was 19 once, too. Then the UCC bill, there was the occupation tax. And then there was treating school employees at the same level as police for instances of assault of school employees. And the governor thought, they're already considered a bit of a different class, and not really a need to elevate them to the level of assaulting a police officer. I don't know of anything that's too controversial. The UCC, that might be more controversial because the business community is generally backing the UCC because that's involved in a lot of bank transactions and they disagree on with her on some of that Bitcoin and electronic currency stuff. But, you know, it's probably, I would say we're one of the first states on it. So you've got people coming out of the woodwork to oppose it, which probably doesn't help. If it had passed in all the other states and we were the outlier, then it probably wouldn't be so controversial. But, otherwise nothing too earth shattering on the vetoes.
Let's go back to the hemp one quick. The title of the press release said governor vetoes classifying marijuana as hemp. Now we got to put the brakes on. So I talked to a source that is kind of familiar with production and stuff around hemp, but I did some research and here's what I found out. Hemp, obviously, this is like your hemp oils, you know, things like that. As far as I know, nobody's smoking hemp. So basically what this bill did is there's there's a federal maximum of THC content in hemp product, 0.3%. We raised it to 1%, and now they want that 4% variant. From what I understand, one, what the bill does and what the governor said it does are different. The bill states that the 5% threshold, so that variance that they're looking for, that is between producers. You allow up to 5% because as you manufacture these products, you can kind of get up in that THC range. The 1% can't be exceeded in final products. And also the 0.3 number, Ernest Small, it was a 1976 study about the variations of THC products. And this is the number where the federal government, that's the number they're holding, 0.3. The study, it's strange. The study says the 0.3% THC threshold was meant for the study alone. It was never intended to be used elsewise or elsewhere.
The notion that 5% hemp is somehow marijuana is just, it's not true. I mean, from my understanding, you know, after the hemp comes out of the field, it starts to get processed by these manufacturers, and as they're, whether they're, you know, taking part of the product away or they're refining it, it just elevates some of those levels. So what's currently happening in South Dakota is our hemp growers, which, you know, in South Dakota, we've actually tried to pride ourselves in kind of leading the charge on some hemp issues once we finally did get it passed, because obviously it's an agriculture, you know, issue. But what we end up doing is we grow it, and then we end up having to ship it out of state to another state to be able to process it into products. So this bill is designed to get those manufacturing plants in South Dakota, providing South Dakota jobs and providing South Dakota products. But again, by the time that product got to the end consumer, it's back at that acceptable federal threshold.
Hey, as long as we're on these topics a little, not to confuse hemp and any of the THC stuff, did I see that SB1 went through today where it adds PTSD to a medical marijuana condition? That's a nice thing to see.
Yeah, that did go through today. I'm just assuming the governor decided to hold that one to, you know, sign the best one for last. But it's going to help hopefully a lot of our veterans. You know, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I think there's like 39 or 40 states that have medicinal programs. And I think we are one of two states that didn't allow post-traumatic stress disorder specifically by name. So, you know, I'm really happy she decided to sign it. I think it's pretty common sense that when a lot of, you know, the 70% of voters in South Dakota elected to have a medical marijuana program.
Look at you. You go right into campaign mode. You just have it down. That's real smooth, man.
Yeah, I think they did have that intention in mind, because quite frankly, with a lot of these veterans, which, you know, I own a bar. I'm not immune to seeing some of the negative side effects of alcohol and how it affects some veterans. And at the end of the day, we don't want our veterans drinking themselves to death. We don't want our veterans committing suicide or any of these other things. If there's something out there that can help them, I certainly think that's something we should explore, you know, whether it's the lesser of two evils, if, you know, somebody else can have that debate. But at the end of the day, I was really happy she decided to sign it. And I hope it can help some South Dakotans.
Pat, you had a post on your blog about why does anyone have TikTok on their phones at this point? I have TikTok on my phone.
Well, that was an interesting point from Dusty Johnson today on some of what they found out with the testimony in Congress from the head of TikTok, where the CEO of TikTok admits he's being paid by ByteDance, which is a Chinese Communist Party affiliated sister company. China has access to TikTok user data. ByteDance is the parent company of TikTok. And apparently they've spied on Americans at the direction of the Chinese Communist Party. You know, that was part of Governor Noem's package for keeping South Dakota a little safer from foreign adversaries, which, you know, getting TikTok off of state devices. And you know, this is not necessarily a Republican thing, because, I mean, you've got some of these directives to get TikTok off devices coming from the White House. So, you know, it's more of a national security issue that, not a lot of people are saying, yeah, you should put TikTok on your phone. Most people are kind of looking at it going, man, it's maybe not the greatest idea for you.
It hasn't necessarily stopped its growth. I liken this a little bit. I mean, not apples to apples, but in the spread of in the growth of it all. Do you guys remember how West Coast rap got popular? Tipper Gore put a parental advisory sticker on it, and then all of a sudden every white kid in South Dakota knew who West Side Connection was. That's what happened. So, like, this is a little bit that.
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's more of a, you know, just cybersecurity issue at this point. You know, I don't know that I'd have it on any of my devices unless I want to share my password with God knows who. It's hard enough to keep your devices secure. It's one of the reasons I kind of go with a Mac versus a PC. Not as many viruses made for the Mac.
Does your website get hacked by Russian or Chinese agents, Pat?
I have shut off just about all foreign traffic from my website because
Mexico story, Pat.
Well, yeah, I think you and I know Jake, and I've had other people email me and go, hey, is there something wrong with your website? I'm in Cancun or I'm here and I can't get your website. And I have to break it to them that I have all out of country traffic because it's constantly pounded by connections coming out of China. And so I've literally just shut off all that traffic at the server level.
Cancun is just South Daytona. You can make an exception for that.
I got it. This is so funny to me because I have to two things on the TikTok thing. One, it's like listening to you guys talk about this, you know, like a year ago, if someone would have said this, and it'd be like, you know, it's like, okay, like, shut up, Dad, right? Like, Dad, like, you're being ridiculous. Like, this is weird. Like, why are you saying this stuff? It totally reminds me of it. And like, shout out to my dad, who I know listens to this show, because he would talk about like TikTok and whatever. And I'm like, dude, you're crazy. Like, leave me alone. And this is also like something that I think is so funny that like, if there was no proof for this, like we'd be like the tinfoil hat people right now, like TikTok and the CCP, but like, it's just so weird. Like all this stuff's actually come out into the open.
So, but it's not, like, listen, the information we willingly give to companies that have foreign investment in them, like Facebook and Meta and Google, you know, it's not, I'm a little sensitive of this being used as a very slick campaign move mostly. And I think, Pat, you are right.
You heard it here first, folks. Murdoch is pro CCP.
Or what's that other dumb bill she had? The evil foreign governments act. Like, it's just, some of these names are just, come on. I know you're running for vice president a little bit, but it's a little on the nose. If we'll remember, as Lee
actually,
said,
if you want my opinion, when we name stuff like that, or like, you know, when we do stuff like that, it almost kind of belittles the major impact of, you know, when we find out stuff like this, because people just become kind of stale to it, or, you know, like numb to it, where, you know, especially younger folks, they just kind of tuned it out at that point where they're like, well, if China wants to spy on me, whatever.
I'll end it here. China just owns just as much of the pork industry that we eat bacon every day as they do TikTok. So why doesn't everybody keep it cool on, it's a fiery topic on a campaign level for me. But I do think there is, you know, you gotta know the realizations of it. Most of these apps you have, they have the ability to know what you're typing outside of the app when you're on it, and your geography settings. It's not just a TikTok thing.
Well, absolutely, you know, and it probably begs that people pay a little closer attention to their security data and what they put out online. It's I'm kind of surprised that I've got siblings who just aren't even on Facebook, and you go, well, you know, why don't you get on Facebook and so I can send you a message conveniently and easy, as opposed to dialing. they just have no interest in being on Facebook.
Well, speaking of Facebook in the comments, let's talk about what's this protecting South the Kids scorecard I have on this. Is this Noah? Do you know about this?
Oh, I got it. I'll pull it up.
Oh, the protecting South Dakota Kids scorecard. Yeah, that was that's a new one. You know, we've got scorecards from the Family Heritage Alliance, from the Citizens for Liberty, from all these other groups out there, and now we've got one from the Protecting Kids group.
Kids? Was this Fred Deutsch's like weed thing?
Yes. Okay. Yes. It was that group that came out to oppose recreational marijuana, and then they're kind of clucking a bit just because the recreational went down. And so they think they're kind of coming out with a head of steam, and they have their awards of who they believe is out there protecting kids. And in fact, I'm looking at the list, and they cheer on John Hansen and John Mills, Scott Odenbach, and some of the others. And,
Mike, you got an F.
What was that?
Mike, I'm looking at your score. You are suffering a 25%.
Oh, I can already
F.
tell you I got an F.
Yeah, you got an F. You didn't get a zero.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
I was kind of surprised by some of the people who got Fs on that.
This looks like Fred Deutsch's recruitment placard. Here. I mean, isn't that why you do a scorecard? I'm not trying to belittle this, and I'm sure whoever put this together worked on it. But to me, this looks like, oh, we made a group for one issue, and now that issue's kind of over, and even recreational is going to pass eventually. So we better make a scorecard to make sure we've got half an online caucus so we can be dum-dums on the internet.
And this thing is especially hilarious because also the dynamics are like, the usual like Family Heritage Alliance suspects, like JFM got an A+, shocker, but also so did Lee. So like the categories are all over. But here's the funny one. This is the most hilarious and kind of pathetic one to me, is they gave Aaron Tobin an F. Aaron Tobin has two kids. You cannot convince me at any point that she doesn't care about protecting South Dakota kids. She has two South Dakota kids. Stupid scorecard. Roll, I give the scorecard now.
Roll doesn't care about kids. Let's rattle off. Let's look at some Fs. Let's see who got to, who doesn't care about kids this week. It looks like Amber Arlent doesn't. It looks like Mike Derby doesn't care about kids. Looks like Becky Drury doesn't. Becky Drury cares about kids less than Senator Roll does, according to the South Dakotas for Hibbity Jibbities or whatever these guys are called.
So it took me a minute to pull it up, but You guys going to answer this, and I think this is going to kind of show that, sometimes you have to look at the scorecard or the scorekeeper, but this is protecting South Dakota kids, right?
Right.
Why is Senate Bill 1 on there, which allows post-traumatic stress disorder? Do we have kids going off fighting in wars?
Do we?
Well,
maybe if they had sip and spit,
yes.
They would.
Sorry.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, these scorecards are so objective. They just pick whatever bills they want to get it on a score. But while we're talking on that sip and spit, I guess I've kind of noticed it always seems like whenever a bill gets vetoed, I voted for it.
I know this sip and spit thing. The sip and spit. Noah's, I want to drink earlier than I'm legally allowed to, and the stupid UCC bill. I can't get rid of it on this show.
Well, Noah, you got to answer this for me because, being 32, I guess I don't remember the pre-21 days. I guess when you go get communion at church, do you spit that out after?
It's actually non-alcoholic.
Not mine. We grew up. We grew up as good. We grew up at men at Nathaniel Lutheran. We drank the Manischewitz.
I grew up Catholic, so I'm pretty sure there was.
I probably owe I owe my hometown Lutheran church a couple jugs of Manischewitz. Sorry, guys.
We always do our veto bashing, and then we go on our scorecards. Couple positive. There is actually a lot of positive that came out of this last week. Give it to the governor on these two really good bills sponsored by the second place to Roll in the bracket. But great representative, Representative Ray Felt. It was the adult day services. So the adult day services care and the expansion of, I think it was the suicide prevention ones. Yeah. Two great bills there. So,
if we talk a lot about some of the bickering on taxes, but I would agree that, there were a lot of good things to come out of session, where we focus more on what we disagree on, but they got a lot done. And we mentioned
they
teacher pay, the governor made a point to say, we know we're, per the voter, will of the voter, we're stuck with Medicare expansion. They've funded that 100%. They've given more to Medicaid. I have a daughter who we participated in the family support program for families of kids with disabilities. And that's a program that my family accessed, which for about a period of 2 years, we had support come in because I after school, I couldn't leave the house because somebody had to be here with my daughter. And that program was always challenging, and they've got more funds going out to support families of people with disabilities. I mean, we've got the prison system is being funded for expansion that they've been talking about for better than a decade.
Oh, over a decade, at least. Over a decade.
And I mean, it was interesting because I was writing an article for one of the Republican newsletters, and we have facilities that predate statehood.
We were talking about that a few weeks ago.
They're still using in some form. So, I mean, how are we not getting our pants sued off?
Well, I get
they were proactive on it.
I hear all that, guys, and we have Senator Roll on the phone, and he's willing to take a shot back at me on this. But my devil's advocate to that a little bit is we have a boom budget, so of course we could get a lot of stuff done because we have the money to get it done. We also have very specific needs we have that states don't have. Workforce development, because people are moving here, trying to move their business here. A lot of benefits post-COVID and benefit to Noam for her position on South Dakota during it all a little. At the same time, I really think long-term this 0.3% tax cut that goes through is going to be real harmful to the Republican Party because I'm a broken record about it. We passed a tax cut for combine owners. I listened to an economic development guy explain it to the common man the best way I've heard it. You got to spend $100,000 to save $300,000. Where in the state is that helping the common? I get it saves the state $104 million. That's fine. But like that fight's a coming, man.
You know, we're right now in the times of plenty. I think when when things get tighter, we'll be fighting a little more. But you know, and Mike can explain some of the logic behind it. But you know, right now it's great, but things are going to get tighter down the road.
Yeah, I certainly think that as well. I mean, there's no way you can look at the you know, the policies that are coming out of DC, you know, even when you're looking at interest rates, we have not felt that in our economy yet. I'm sorry. It has been too quick for that big of a rise. And traditionally South Dakota kind of lags a little behind, you know, bigger areas because just that effect, it'll take a little longer for a recession to hit us. We'll probably get out of it a little, after, bigger areas, just as a natural deal. But going back to the, I guess, so-called tax cut for combine owners. You know, I could see where someone in Rapid City might not like that, but keep in mind, up in District 1, there's a lot of combines.
Hey, and I'm all about it. My point is it's hard to prow it out and look what we did for the state because 99% of this state ain't going to buy a combine this year.
No, and this doesn't just apply to combines, but, you know, on those big people that are buying combines, you know, they're paying a lot of property tax too. Do I think that we could probably have taken that 0.3% and invested it, and produced more of a, put us in a better place in 20 years? Probably. You know, I can't remember who brought it. I think it was Caden Whitman, school lunch. I think that's a no brainer. I can't believe we don't do it already. We pay for meals and, you know, for prisoners, we're telling these kids they have to be at school. Quite frankly, I think we probably should be paying for that and feeding them. And, you know, I peer the counter that a lot of these people are getting federal kind of kickbacks on it.
And I know these are dual discussions. These have to exist at the same time. I get all that, too. It's just, yeah. You know, I just don't think long term it's going to resonate as well as everyone might think.
But hold on.
Yeah, well, a lot of it's going to depend on how the economy looks in the next 4 to 5 years. And that's why we put that sunset on there. To make sure the people of South Dakota are protected.
Kids on an income requirement, you can already get drastically reduced costs for reduced and free lunches, depending on income requirements.
So, if your parents fill it all out, yep, you certainly can. When I talk to my employees that have kids, some of them probably would qualify for it and some of them probably won't. But I can tell you that every single one of them tells me the hardest bill they pay is their school lunch bill for their kid because they don't know about it. You know, I know rent's going to be due every month. I know what that amount's going to be. I have it ready. You know, a lot of these scenarios where a parent, you know, especially when you have a single parent, but a lot of these scenarios when you have a parent that is working all the time and you're sitting at home at dinner with your kid, asking them how their day was, and you find out they're a week behind on their school lunch and you got to write a check for it. That's a really hard check for a lot of families that are in that lower bracket that might not qualify for the federal, didn't apply for the federal. But at the end of the day, I just think it's something that provides an overall benefit. I mean,
moderates.
You know what? That's the thing about politics, though, and especially with me. You can call me whatever part of the spectrum you want to. That doesn't bug me. I'm trying to represent a district, not a party.
And you go right back into campaigning. You're almost better than anyone we have on this show. You slide into it so natural, man. All right, we're up against the time, guys. Pat, make sure you get a good plug out to the site and everything.
DakotaWarCollege.com. Trying to keep it local and keep it real.
He is Pat Powers from said site. If you were ever thinking about running for office, he's certainly one of the first people you should get a hold of. He's Senator Michael Roll from up in the Great Northeast, District 1. Thank you for co-hosting with us today, sir. Well done.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm surprised you guys just let me talk about anything without like a...
You're pretty good at it, man.
...with a ruler.
No, you're pretty good at it. I'm Murdoch from the Home Slice Group out in Rapid City. That's Noah Greville. This is Dakota War College. Oh, God, I can't believe I did it again. This is Dakota Town Hall.
You gotta keep it in.
Keep it in. Damn it.
Next week on Dakota Town Hall.
Next week on the show, Noah, we jumped the gun a little last week when we promoted it, but it's confirmed we'll be talking with U.S. House of Representatives Dusty Johnson on a matter of issues.
You know, I'm going to be excited to hear a firsthand perspective of what it's like to have Marjorie Taylor Greene screaming.
He's got a great story on it, man. Excited. It's really funny. I can't wait for him to tell it.
Also, we're going to have Senator Casey Crabtree coming on, going to wrap up post-veto day stuff and what's to come next year for South Dakota legislature.
That's next week on Dakota Town Hall.
Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's weekly podcast. Episodes available every Friday. For more information or to request availability, please go to dakotatownhall.com. Dakota Town Hall is presented in partnership with Home Slice Audio, produced by Leslie Klein. Music and audio production by Oakley Tai. Research by Home Slice Audio and Dakota Town Hall. Graphics by Timmy Grablander. Social media content by Scout Wheeler. And website design by Trey Wynn. Editorial advisor and executive producer, Brad Murdoch Jurgensen. Special thanks to all of our weekly guests. While we try to be accurate with all of our information, this show is recorded live and errors may happen. For corrections, please visit dakotatownhall.com. Hosted by Noah Grable, Jake Schoenbeck, and Brad Murdoch Jurgensen. Dakota Town Hall, another Home Slice Audio production.